Welcome to another news section. I'm Mohammed Gord, and in this episode, we are discussing Iran's nuclear program and Israel's acts of sabotage and terror against it. First, we have a report by the New York Times titled "Iran's Nuclear Program Ignites New Tensions Between the U.S. and Israel." According to the report, long-running differences over how to deal with Iran's nuclear program have erupted into new tensions between the Biden administration and Israel, with two senior Israeli officials leaving Washington this week concerned that the Americans' commitment to restoring the 2015 nuclear deal will lead to a flawed agreement allowing Tehran to speed ahead with its nuclear enrichment program. The report goes on by saying the strains were evident all week as the Biden administration sought to bring the alliance with Israel into a united front about how to deal with Iran over the next year. But at the heart of the tensions between Israel and the United States is the fundamental disagreement over how to approach the Iranian nuclear program. It is not a new argument. The two allies fought bitterly over the 2015 agreement which Israel opposed and President Barack Obama signed. More recently, they've disagreed about the wisdom of the Israeli sabotage of Iranian facilities, which Mr. Bennett's government believes has set back the program, and which some in the United States argue only encourages the Iranian to build back the nuclear enrichment facilities with more efficient and up-to-date equipment. Meanwhile, a report published in the Financial Tribune says sustainable sanctions relief is the only way to address the nuclear standoff. The report cites a Middle East specialist saying the only way to address Iran's nuclear issue is for the United States to lift its economic sanctions and ensure sustainability of the 2015 nuclear deal from which it once withdrew unilaterally. If the U.S. does, Iran for its part will fully implement its commitments under the JCPOA permanently. That's what Hossein Mousavian said in an article published by the Middle East Eye. Mousavian also offered two other scenarios, the first being what many Israeli officials are advocating, a U.S. military strike on Iran's nuclear facilities in case of a failure to restore the JCPOA. I believe that this is a bluff to put more pressure on Iran. The U.S. is in no mood to launch a new war in the Middle East, he said. The second scenario would be a continuation of Trump's failed strategy of maximum pressure, namely full-blown economic, political, and cyber wars with sabotage including continuing Israeli covert attacks on Iran's nuclear facilities and assassinations of its nuclear scientists. Thanks for joining me in this episode's news section. And now, back to David.
Now, regarding the extent to which Israel might be able to influence the Vienna talks, which are moving in the direction of an understanding between Iran and Western parties to the deal, given Israel's weakened position with the Islamic Resistance Axis having surrounded it, its apartheid government, and its being a UN member without having signed up with the NPT, Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, its allies appear less zealous in supporting it.
The French government and Mr. Macron said Israel is taking a path that leads to apartheid. The racism and apartheid in Israel, which is internationally reprehensible, together with its inability to manage itself and the COVID-19 pandemic, which has turned into a real problem for Tel Aviv, is prompting mass migrations from Israel.
Also, even if it's just a game of good cop, bad cop between America and Israel in dealing with Iran, America has come to realize that warlike hostility towards Iran is only pushing this country closer to independence with a nuclear program that has been indigenized and is working faster and more efficiently than before. The one thing that had limited the program was the nuclear deal that the U.S. ditched. We now have Mr. Hanizadeh, an analyst worth hearing, even if only online.
The Israeli foreign minister's visit to European countries to stop the progress made in Vienna talks have failed. The differences between U.S. President Joe Biden's team and Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett has prevented Tel Aviv from sabotaging the talks during the 7th and 8th round of negotiations. That's why it appears that Israel is no longer likely to be able to affect the process of talks in Vienna, since it has exhausted all its political and economic capabilities. Despite all that, good progress is made in the talks, and the Israeli regime will suffer defeat soon.
The assassination of Iran's top nuclear scientists aside, in the 20 months running up to November 2021, there had been four explosions at Iranian nuclear facilities attributed to Israel. Explosions that took uranium enrichment plants offline and destroyed dozens of centrifuges. Noting this and the fact that Iran had managed to resume enrichment within months, often installing newer machines that can enrich uranium far faster, U.S. officials reportedly gave a friendly warning to the Israelis that while preemptive attacks and assassinations may be tactically satisfying, they are ultimately counterproductive.
Over the past 10 years, Israel attempted to conduct sabotage operations in Natanz and Karaj nuclear facilities 9 times, 3 of which were successful, and 6 others were stopped. The regime is trying to either assassinate Iranian scientists or attack Iranian nuclear facilities directly. Relevant institutions are vigilant and have been able to neutralize the regime's attempts to carry out sabotage operations in Iran's peaceful nuclear program.
In improving its modern warfare defenses, Iran made sure to cover the cyber field. This would make it much harder to pull off cyber attacks such as Stuxnet. That was the U.S.-Israeli stunt that crippled centrifuges at the Natanz nuclear enrichment site for more than a year. Stuxnet, being a malicious computer worm first uncovered in 2010, which targets supervisory control and data acquisition systems. With all the economic pain inflicted on Iran because of U.S. sanctions, there's no telling the United States has any more leverage over this country than it did in the run-up to the 2015 nuclear deal. And that's not just because of Iranian policy, but the U.S.'s own policy of taking an aggressively hostile stance towards the European Union over Iran. Because this has made the EU rethink its reliance on the U.S. Just as a reminder, the 2015 nuclear deal, which became operational in 2016, was to award Iran relief from nuclear-related economic sanctions imposed on it by the UN in return for Iran rolling back its nuclear program, which Iran did do. Now, Israel has pressed upon its allies that Iran's program is malicious, partly as a smokescreen for its own nuclear program and its scores of nuclear warheads, the number of which it keeps secret.
Israel has 11 active nuclear plants on an area smaller than 22,000 square kilometers, the biggest of which is Dimona, located in the southern Negev Desert, which is producing plutonium at a 98% purity level. Dimona is one of the most polluting nuclear plants in the world, dumping some 30 tons of nuclear waste into the Mediterranean Sea. The Eastern Mediterranean is witnessing more environmental pollution year by year. This is one of the environmental dangers threatening the region.
Netanyahu, Israel's longest-serving prime minister, has campaigned against Iran for almost 30 years, accusing it of secretly developing nuclear weapons for use against Israel. He advocated for no less than crippling sanctions and even war against this country. Now, Israel is the entity it is. Its invasive founding has, yes, caused it to base its survival on terrorism. What's astounding is how international conventions and organizations haven't taken it upon themselves to respond appropriately. Israel's acts of hostility in this country are as old as Iran's nuclear program itself. Why is it that the global community, even international organizations, have sat quiet?
The most important reason is that there are international organizations like the IAEA, which is an agency that has to strive to prevent the proliferation of nuclear weapons and at the same time protect the country's rights to have peaceful nuclear programs and their scientists and facilities. But they don't provide that support. The year after the assassination of Mr. Fakhrizadeh, IAEA Secretary General Mr. Grassi hasn't taken action or condemned the move. These institutions are legally under the control of dominant powers, which in this case is the United States.
That'll be it for today. Long live the memory of those who served. Thanks for staying with us to review legacies. Do join us again at the same times next week and each week after. Bye for now.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Muslims respect for Jesus Christ no less than that of Christians. December 27, 2000. Undoubtedly, Muslims' respect for Jesus Christ is no less than that of faithful Christians for him. This great divine prophet always made efforts during his lifetime to fight oppression, transgression, corruption, and those who tried to dominate nations by relying on their wealth and power and cause them to suffer, both in this world and the hereafter. The sufferings which this great prophet endured since his childhood, God appointed him to his prophetic mission during his childhood, were all aimed at achieving these goals. Today, many of those who claim to follow the teachings of Jesus Christ are treading a path other than the one set by Jesus Christ. Jesus led humans to worshipping God and opposing pharaohs and transgressions. Today, there are people who claim to be the followers of that great prophet, but have taken the place of pharaohs and taghuts, whom Jesus Christ used to oppose during his time.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Religious minorities supporting the Islamic Republic, a source of honor for it. July the 9th, 2000. Thankfully, the followers of many different faiths live together peacefully in the Islamic Republic. Jews, Christians, and Zoroastrians live alongside Muslims in the Islamic Republic. They cooperate with the Islamic Republic and play a role in the country. Of course, they shoulder certain duties. The Islamic Republic also shoulders certain duties towards them as Iranian citizens, which it fulfills. The Islamic Republic has no complaints against its citizens who are among the religious minorities of the country. When the enemies launch propaganda against the Islamic Republic in a sly manner, Jewish citizens publish statements. In other cases, Armenians or other religious minorities issued statements and expressed their support for the Islamic Republic. This is a source of honor for the Islamic Republic. The Renaissance paradise turned into an inferno. May the 9th, 2015. When the Westerners during the Renaissance period in Europe separated religion from science and politics, they intended to build a paradise on earth similar to one promised to mankind by religions. That paradise is now turned into an inferno. This is something even admitted by the Westerners themselves. It is true that the religion that European intellectuals in the Renaissance period opposed was not a true religion but a body of superstitions. It was totally against scientific advances and discoveries. This is why Galileo was sentenced to death for his scientific views, and other scientists were also tortured and even died of torture for their scientific discoveries. It was a distorted version of Christianity, not real Christianity. Therefore, there was nothing wrong with parting with this kind of religion in that period.
Allah, I wanna thank you. The self-proclaimed beacon of democracy faced unprecedented assaults on its capital in opposition to election results and claims of voter fraud. January 6, 2021 revealed once again how U.S. democracy is fragile and more rhetoric than substance. It also exemplified the incompetence of U.S. officials in protecting their own capital, with scenes of congressmen and women hiding under chairs and tables, fearing for their lives. Many believe that the attack was an attempted coup pushed by outgoing President Donald Trump, and others believe it was an effort to save so-called democracy against a fraudulent election with illegitimate results.
Fraud or coup?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to We the People. I'm your host, Daniel Arya, and in this episode, we'll discuss the Capitol riot on the anniversary of the January 6, 2021 events in Washington, D.C., reasons behind the attack on Congress, claims of voter fraud, Donald Trump's role in the riots, the divide in the country, and what is to come in the 2024 elections. In the program, we're pleased to have our two guests on our show, John Pfeffer, writer, editor, activist, and co-director of Foreign Policy and Focus at the Institute of Policy Studies, and Melik Abdul, political commentator and GOP strategist. Both of our guests are stationed out of Washington, D.C. Please stay tuned.
On January 6, 2021, while the U.S. Joint Session of Congress was assembled to count the electoral votes, Donald Trump held another assembly, calling the elections a fraud and cheering his supporters to take back the country. Trump told the protesters before the riot, "If you don't fight like hell, you're not going to have a country anymore."
Now it is up to Congress to confront this egregious assault on our democracy. And after this, we're going to walk down, and I'll be there with you. We're going to walk down. Anyone you want, but I think right here we're going to walk down to the Capitol and we're going to cheer on our brave senators and congressmen and women, and we're probably not going to be cheering so much for some of them, because you'll never take back our country with weakness. You have to show strength and you have to be strong.
After Trump's supporters stormed Congress, forcing representatives to hide under chairs and tables and ultimately evacuating it, the tables turned against Trump and many officials strongly condemned the attack and called for his second impeachment. This prompted Trump to give another address condemning the attack on the Capitol. separating himself from his supporters and ultimately his own wards.
I would like to begin by addressing the heinous attack on the United States Capitol. Like all Americans, I am outraged by the violence, lawlessness, and mayhem. I immediately deployed the National Guard and federal law enforcement to secure the building and expel the intruders. America is and must always be a nation of law and order. The demonstrators who infiltrated the Capitol have defiled the seat of American democracy. To those who engage in the acts of violence and destruction, you do not represent our country. And to those who broke the law, you will pay.
On that day, the Capitol complex was locked down. Lawmakers and staff were evacuated, while rioters assaulted law enforcement officers, vandalized property, and occupied the building for several hours. Five people died either shortly before, during, or following the event. One was shot by Capitol Police, another died of a drug overdose, and three died of other causes. Many people were injured, including 138 police officers. So what were the main reasons for the riot?
The main reason for the Capitol riots was, of course, Donald Trump, who was president of the United States at that moment. And he had, of course, refused to acknowledge the results of the 2020 election. He continued to argue that he was, in fact, the winner, not Joe Biden. And he encouraged his followers to continue to question the election and to try to overturn the election. And the January 6th rally that he called in Washington was the latest effort on his part to force a confrontation with his own vice president, Mike Pence, who was constitutionally required to certify the election. And he encouraged his followers to put pressure on the vice president and also on Congress not to certify the elections, which was supposed to happen on January 6th.
Four police officers committed suicide in the aftermath of the attacks. In January, an MPD officer, a 12-year veteran of the force, and Capitol Police officer Howard Liebengood, a 16-year veteran, both of whom had responded to the 6th January attack, died by suicide. Two other officers took their lives, and the announcement of the deaths of 26-year-old DeFreitag and Hashida came a week after several officers testified to a House of Representatives Select Committee investigating the 6th January insurrection.
Well, I think the pressures on the defenders of the Capitol were immense. They did not expect there to be a violent confrontation, and I think the kind of vitriol and the criticism directed by Trump supporters at the defenders, the guards, and the other police officers who were defending the Capitol. The vitriol and the criticism was very, very heavy, and I think that there was a psychological toll that all of these defenders had to experience. And for some of them, it was too much.
Donald Trump and his campaign had filed several lawsuits in different states contesting election results, citing irregularities and voter fraud, which was turned down by the courts. After pressure from the White House, the Attorney General William Barr resigned, refusing to not accept the election results. A year on, a committee is reviewing the January 6th incident and calling former White House staff and other former officials to testify. So how relevant were the voter fraud claims?
Well, what we've heard is that there were actually people who were concerned about the election being stolen. What initially started actually as a series of marches, or if you will, here in D.C., which is where I live, I'm in Washington, D.C., I actually participated in the first march. That was, I think, probably sometime December or late November. So I participated in the first one, but this one, people were upset. And so they decided to go into the Capitol and have a really riot at the Capitol. But I don't think if there was any justification for it. But what we do know is that those were some of the reasons that people were giving.
Thing I believe in, and everything.
Donald Trump also went against the Supreme Court in his tweets, stating the U.S. Supreme Court has been totally incompetent and weak on the massive election fraud that took place in the 2020 presidential election. We have absolute proof, but they don't want to see it. No standing, they say. If we have corrupt elections, we have no country. What was Trump's role in the riot?
Donald Trump and his allies essentially created the conditions in which the rioters could come together, and they promoted a philosophy that animated the rioters. You could say that Donald Trump essentially lit the fuse that then exploded into the January 6th insurrection.
Some Republicans also criticized Trump's actions after the elections and likened him to a child. Republican Congressman Adam Kinzinger responded to Trump's tweets, calling them a temper tantrum and crazy conspiracies. Addressing Donald Trump, Kinzinger said he was trying to burn the place down on the way out because you can't handle losing. Twitter permanently suspended Trump's Twitter account, citing risk of further incitement of violence. Did these comments and prosecutions affect the belief of Trump supporters?
Oh, no. No, those hardcore supporters, they were going to believe that whether people were arrested or even those who have actually been prosecuted. I don't think that for a certain percentage of Americans, there's nothing that you would be able to say to convince them that the election itself was not stolen. I don't believe of the 74 or so million people who voted for Donald Trump, which I am one of those, most of us don't believe that the election was stolen. But I do expect that you'll find people who will continue to believe that in the same way that people believed that Donald Trump actually coordinated with Russia to steal the election in 2016. People still believe that, even though our federal government has said that's not true.
A committee has been formed in the House of Representatives to investigate the January 6th attack on Congress. According to a new report released by the January 6th committee, former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows sent an email that day saying the National Guard will be present to protect pro-Trump people in the lead-up to the U.S. Capitol insurrection. So why was security so low at the Capitol that day?
Well, I don't think anybody really took the rioters' own slogans and propaganda seriously. It was expected that they were just a small group of malcontents. But to be honest, of course, if a different president had been in office at that time, that president probably would have provided greater security. And Donald Trump, of course, was the president at that time, and he did not provide sufficient security because, of course, he questioned the events of the election, and I think he ultimately wanted there to be a confrontation between his supporters and his own vice president and Congress.
The committee's chairman said the panel is looking at issuing subpoenas to Republican members of Congress to force their cooperation. This panel is trying to establish then-President Donald Trump's actions while thousands of his supporters attacked police, vandalized the Capitol, and sent members of Congress and then-Vice President Mike Pence running for their lives.
Vice President Pence and his family quickly moved down the stairs. The Vice President turns around briefly as he's headed down. As Pence was being evacuated, rioters started to spread throughout the Capitol. And you can hear the mob calling for the death of the Vice President of the United States.
the United States is more divided than ever. Perhaps it has not been so divided since the Civil War between the North and the South. After a term of four tremulous years, Donald Trump lost the elections to Joe Biden, but did not concede till the last minute. He went against his own Vice President Mike Pence and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. In rallies against the outcome of the elections, some Trump supporters were calling to hang Mike Pence. How serious is the divide in the country?
It's a real serious divide. It's something that's been building for a while. I would probably say since I first started following politics, you know, this kind of started in earnest. I would probably say, at least as far as the toxic divide, under the George W. Bush administration, it continued through Barack Obama's administration, Donald Trump's administration, and the same will exist now in the Biden administration. I think that people use these type of opportunities. People foment a lot of anger. They push a lot of really hate. And unfortunately, I think that social media has played a very large role in that because it allows people to really be their worst selves and be praised for it. And being it's financially profitable to be that way. And I think that's an unfortunate thing. But we are seriously divided here in the United States. And unlike what many people thought when Joe Biden got in office, that he would be able to change that, he hasn't, because this has been a long time in the making.
Now with Trump wanting to run again and Biden's approval rating falling, political spectators are skeptical about America's political future and wonder if there would ever be some kind of unity in the country. Experts are worried about violence and more riots, since nothing seems to sow the rift among the people and politicians.
Well, the 2024 elections are still quite a bit away, but unfortunately, there does seem to be increased polarization and even increased examples of threats coming from Congress, from members of Congress, as well as directed toward members of Congress. And because of that, it would seem that there is, unfortunately, a great likelihood that there would be violence both before and after the 2024 election.
A new University of Massachusetts Amherst poll highlights how partisanship has hardened in the year since the deadly January 6th riot and the stark breakdown on how Democrats and Republicans view that day and the results of last November's presidential race. So will Donald Trump run again in the 2024 elections?
Well, I'm hoping that Donald Trump actually doesn't run. I'm one of those who believe that if Donald Trump another Donald Trump term wouldn't actually be good, as much as I support him. But I think that a lot of people are realizing that Joe Biden actually overpromised and under-delivered on a lot of things. And I think that's the biggest thing that people are seeing now with Joe Biden. His mental acuity aside, and the criticisms of that, and he's not being as sharp as even Donald Trump was, I think a lot of people are seeing that there were a lot of things that they thought would happen under a Joe Biden presidency that's just not going to happen in many ways, because that's just not how our federal government works. There are a lot of expectations that people had of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris as vice president, but none of that at this point is coming into fruition. And I think that's going to be the biggest thing that will harm Democrats, not just in 2022 during our midterm cycle, but also in 2024 during our next presidential election in 2024.
Also, according to a Morning Consult political poll, more voters say they would like to see former President Donald Trump run in 2024 than Biden, in a troubling sign for the sitting president as his approval ratings continue to sink.
It's still early in the Biden administration. He hasn't even been in office for 1 year, and it's quite common for presidents to suffer a decline in popularity after their honeymoon period. So I anticipate that his approval ratings will increase over the next year. The Democrats, of course, will suffer a setback of some kind in the midterm elections of 2022. But the question really is what the situation will be 4 years from now. That's hard to predict. But I expect that the Democrats will have concrete wins, legislative wins, that they can use to increase the likelihood that people will come back to the polls and support them again. And we have to remember that Donald Trump's negative approval ratings are still very high. In other words, his negative rating is very high. So that will likely make it very difficult for the former president to become a president again.
What is interesting is that more voters might want Trump in the race than Biden, but most don't want to see either candidate on the 2024 ballot. Roughly 2 in 5 voters, 39%, said Trump should run for president in 2024, compared with 34% who said the same of Biden. The majority of voters opposed 2024 campaigns from Trump, 56%, and Biden, 58%. What are the reasons behind these responses to the polls?
There's a lot that can happen between now and 2024, but I think that there's, because there have been people here in the United States who have not been happy with the job that Joe Biden has done since he's been in the White House, I think people will have a different perspective because they were led to believe that the only thing that you had to do was to get rid of Donald Trump and everything else would fall in place. And Joe Biden himself said that he wanted to actually, he ran for president because he realized that the soul of the nation was actually harmed, and he wanted to bring the country back from the brinks of whatever it is that he said was wrong with the country.
Now, the United States has repeatedly supported color revolutions throughout the world, replacing elected governments with claims of vote fraud and by encouraging people who believe that their elections were stolen to pour out into the streets and hold demonstrations. Democrats and Republicans alike have supported some of these so-called revolutions and even participated in the demonstrations. It's interesting that when a similar event on a smaller scale takes place in their own backyard, they collectively act shocked and disgusted.
People of Ukraine, this is your moment. Народи українські, це ваш момент. This is about you, no one else. Це про вас. This is about the future you want for your country. This is about the future you deserve.
Це про ваше майбутнє, про майбутнє вашої країни. Це про майбутнє, на яке ви заслуговуєте.
A future in Europe,
майбутнє Європи,
a future of peace,
майбутнє миру
with all of your neighbors,
майбутнє всіх ваших сусідів.
The free world is with you, America is with you, I am with you. And the destiny you seek lies in Europe.
І ваша доля.
Ukraine will make Europe better, and Europe will make Ukraine better.
Thank you. Thank
you. Some of the similar actions by the public prompted and funded by the United States around the world in order to install puppet governments supporting U.S. agenda occurred after Trump lost the elections in 2020. Witnessing the response of U.S. officials from the suspension of Trump's Twitter account to criminally charging up to 600 people in the January 6th riots displays the U.S. hypocritical approach towards elections and democracy.
Yeah, I believe there are similarities to what we're seeing around the world when it comes to people protesting their government, protesting their democracy, if you will. I think the biggest distinction, well, probably difference is that this is typically something we don't see in the United States. A lot of things changed once Donald Trump got into office, and people like to really focus on what Republicans have done. But really, the psyche of our whole country changed once Donald Trump was actually elected president, because prior to that, we never here in the U.S. Protested presidents or people winning the presidency. That changed in 2016 once Donald Trump was actually elected, where people began to protest in ways that we haven't seen.
And now once again, people and politicians are bracing themselves for another Donald Trump campaign and his possible win in the 2024 elections. Win or lose, many commentators believe that in the present poisonous political climate, riots, violence, and more divide are a given in the next presidential elections and its aftermath. Well, everyone, that was our show. I'm your host, Daniel Arya. Do join us again next week for another episode of We the People. Bye-bye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the All Compassionate, the All Merciful. Salam and welcome to another episode of our weekly series titled Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, that was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. We continue from where we left you last Friday. And here are ayahs 22, 23, and 24 of Surah Tur.
وَأَمْدَدْنَاهُمْ بِفَاكِهَةٍ وَلَحْمٍ مِّمَّا يَشْتَهُونَ يَتَنَازَعُونَ فِيهَا كَأْسًا لَا لَغْوٌ فِيهَا وَلَا تَأْثِيمٌ ويطوف عليهم غلمان لهم كأنهم لؤلؤ مكنون
we will provide them with fruits and meat, such as they desire. There they will pass from hand to hand a cup wherein there will be neither any vain talk nor sinful speech. They will be waited upon by youth, their own, as if they were guarded pearls. If you might recall, in our explanation of the previous ayahs of this surah last week, we said the rewards for the people of paradise will be both spiritual and material bounties. Paradise is the place of chastity, virtue, and morality, where men and women will be legally and lawfully bonded together in the sanctity of wedlock, and not any form of licentiousness. In Islam, faith is the base for building a virtuous family. Thus, the true believers will be joined by their virtuous spouses and offspring in paradise. The ayahs that we recited to you now proceed with an enumeration of the bounties which shall be bestowed upon the people of paradise, saying that the Almighty Creator provides whatever the people of paradise desire of meat and fruits, and they shall bear neither hardship nor affliction for obtaining them. Unlike our world, the fruits in paradise are not seasonal, but are available all the time. The people of paradise shall pass from hand to hand a cup brimming with a delightful drink that shall not take away reason, nor shall it lead to committing of vices. While reclining comfortably under luxurious couches, the people of paradise shall be served by most beautiful waiters resembling pearls in shells, which is a reference to their chastity and purity of purpose. These servants shall be exclusive for each and every person. From these ayahs, we learn that, number one, paradise abounds with various fruits, healthy meats, and delicious drinks, the likes of which are not found in our world. And moreover, for the consumers, these bounties have no negative effects. Number two, in order to attain the reward of paradise, we should strive for virtue and repent of all our misdeeds, including vain talks and useless deeds, since in paradise, such idle prattle does not exist. And number three, the delicious drinks of paradise are free of any intoxicants, while the waiters serving the people of paradise are a spotlessly pure youth whose virtue is beyond an iota of doubts. Now let us listen to Ayahs 25, 26, 27, and 28 of the same surah.
وَأَقْبَلَ بَعْضُهُمْ عَلَى بَعْضٍ يَتَسَاءَلُونَ قَالُوا إِنَّا كُنَّا قَبْلُ فِي أَهْلِنَا مُشْفِقِينَ فَمَنَّ من الله علينا ووقانا عذاب السموم إنا كنا من قبل ندعوه إنه هو البر الرحيم.
The people of paradise will turn to one another, questioning each other. They will say, indeed, aforetime we used to be apprehensive about our families, but Allah showed us favor and He saved us from the punishment of the infernal miasma. Indeed, we used to supplicate Him aforetime. Indeed, He is the All-Benign, the All-Merciful. These ayahs are indicative of the eternal bliss enjoyed by the people of paradise who are always thankful to God Almighty. And while associating with one another, they will recount how their obedience of the Lord Most High has removed all anxieties, including their utmost care in guiding their families on the right path, and thus saved them from divine punishment. The people of paradise acknowledge the reality of the Almighty Creator's grace, benevolence, and mercy, for which they used to pray in the transient world. These ayahs teach us the following points. Number one, paradise and hell are the results of one's own deeds. And of course, the all-merciful Lord, who has given us ample respite in the world, is always ready to forgive the penitents and shower them with all bounties. Number two, a believer is always concerned of guiding his or her family on the right path and grooming children to be obedient to God Almighty. And number three, the people of paradise are grateful to the Lord Most High and consider the bliss granted to them as divine favor rather than mere recompense for their paltry virtuous deeds. Now we invite you to listen to Ayah 29 and 30 of Surah Tur in conclusion of this week's
episode.
O prophets, admonish the disbelievers. By your Lord's blessing, you are not a soothsayer, nor mad, as they allege. Do the disbelievers say, he is a poet for whom we await a fatal accident? These ayahs, after recounting the blessings of paradise, addresses Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. God Almighty commands the Prophet to remind the disbelievers of their duty and to warn them of the consequences of their misdeeds, including their vile accusations of calling the Prophet a soothsayer, a madman, or a poet. The Prophet is the messenger of God to mankind, and his mission is guidance towards the path of monotheism and virtue. God protects the Prophet, so stop dreaming of any untoward accident happening to him. From these ayahs, we'll learn that, number one, it is a habit of the opponents of the prophets to try to belittle them by calling them names and accusing them of madness in a vain bid to prevent people from being guided to the path of God. And number two, the enemies of Islam desire to see the end of Islam and wish harm for the prophets, the imams, the saints, and virtuous religious leaders, but their devilish dreams and their plots will never be materialized, since God is the Almighty Protector.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
82% of the UK's population has been fully vaccinated against COVID-19. There is vaccine hesitancy in every community, but in some more than others. The proportion of unvaccinated people is roughly twice as high in South Asian people and four times as high among black people.
There's a long history of medical abuse in our communities. We have disproportionate impacts on medical interventions. Be that sickle cell anemia, be that infant mortality in the first year of life, a whole range of conditions. Vaccine hesitancy and scepticism is quite high in our community and has to be acknowledged. You can't berate people into doing the right thing.
Doctors have urged unvaccinated black and South Asian people to get their COVID jabs after new data revealed hospitalizations and deaths are higher in these groups. But there seems to be little appetite for it. More than 90% of all white people aged 50 to 54 have been vaccinated with a first dose. That compares with just 62% of those of Caribbean heritage.
To find out more, we've come to Brixton, a part of London that has a thriving Afro-Caribbean community.
But plenty of people that don't want to take it, they say they don't know what's in it. They said they don't know what's in it, and it makes some people sick. They call me. When I had it, I was off work for 2 months straight.
The community, they think Boris is just a player. He's not explaining exactly what he needs to do or what he's doing. And 1 week, he changed his mind. It's a game. He's playing a game. And people are not children.
A lot of people are not taking no vaccine now. You see? A lot. For me, my kids, no. My kids, they work in the hospital. So in the hospital, probably they will tell them to take something, I don't know. But for me, no.
The black community is more likely to live in a densely populated area, work in public-facing roles such as health and social care, and live in large and multi-generational households.
The pandemic should be seen as a magnifying lens that has amplified existing disadvantage and has made that acutely aggravated. So whatever was the problems before, black and ethnic minority youth unemployment has doubled during the pandemic. That we've seen the rate of mental ill health and breakdown within our community go off the charts.
Vaccine hesitancy is not unfounded. Historical medical experiments conducted on black people remain in their psyche, far outweighing their fear of COVID-19. So now, they'd rather see the vaccines tested on the white people first. Bianca Rahimi, London.
Syrian President Bashar al-Assad met Iranian Minister of Roads and Urban Development Rustam Qasimi. During the meeting, the two sides discussed means of expanding bilateral cooperation in public and private sectors, as well as